Well, I guess if I would have timed it better, this would have been a Palm Sunday sermon, but it's not. Sorry. Well, I won't get into that. We're in Mark chapter 4, verse 35 through 41. Mark chapter 4. And we can kind of apply the events that we're going to look at actually to the week before the crucifixion, but hopefully you'll see that. We've just gone over, I mean, when you look back at the first several chapters of the book of Mark, you can see the confusion that went on in the disciples' minds. It's like the people that everybody thought were insiders, the religious people, became the outsiders. People that were the outsiders became the insiders. The people, you know, he was accused of eating with sinners and tax collectors, and why was he doing that? And the things that he was saying, people were like, wait a minute. He's saying he has power to forgive sin. He's saying he has the power over the Sabbath. The only person that has the power over the Sabbath is God. He was casting out demons. He had power over diseases. This was beginning to get really confusing. They were beginning to understand he's the Messiah, just not kind of the way we expected him to be. He just went through the parables. In the beginning of chapter 4, last week we talked about the sower and the seeds. He had to explain that to them. On who, you know, who is what soil, and that the, you know, if you cast out the seeds, it will grow. Don't worry about it. He talked about the lampstand. You don't take a lamp and bring it into your house and put it under a bushel basket. That would be dumb. You wouldn't want to turn the lights on so that and then cover them. I mean, it would make no sense. And then he talked about the small seed, the mustard seed that would become a big tree. So this was a long day. If you look at, and let me just, or turn to Mark chapter 4, verse 35. I'm going to read 35 through 41. And on that day, when evening had come, he said to them, let's go over to the other side of the lake. And leaving the multitude, he took them along with them, just as he was in the boat, and other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. And he himself was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. And they awoke him and said to him, Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? And being aroused, he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, Hush, be still. And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, Why are you so timid? How is it that you have no faith? And they became very afraid, much afraid, and said to one another, Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? I mean, it's amazing that Mark would write these verses down and tell us how confused they were and how scared they were. Think about if you put yourself, again, if we can kind of eliminate the fact that we know the rest of the story, think of this long day. Yesterday we went down to the dental school to see, it was family day, and you know, you got to sit in the lecture hall, which was creepy. Brings back icky memories. But this lecture hall, and they went through the curriculum and all the sciences they have to take. And if you look at the list, you're like, no wonder he's tired, you know, at the end of the day. And you're in science classes all day long. Then we went to his lab, and Jonathan used to come home and he'd say, I waxed a tooth. And you're like, what? You know, I never got it until we went to the thing. And you'd have to see what they have to do. And I never realized how tiny a tooth is and how they have to drill holes in this little tooth and then fill it with this little stuff. And I'm like, I could, Amy did one and I did one, and if I showed you the two, and they gave us big teeth to work on. And if I, the point is, they were, Jonathan's tired at the end of the day. This was a full day of teaching and listening and trying, and the disciples sitting there trying to figure this out. You know, tell us about the sower and the seeds, will you? We don't get it. And then at the end of the day, he's in the boat and he says, we got to go to the other side. Okay. And, you know, if you've ever taught, I mean, teaching is hard work, isn't it? You're pretty, work is hard work. I mean, at the end of the day, I get home and I'm pretty much wasted. You know, and that's what they're feeling. I mean, this was one long, grueling day. And he says, let's get away from the crowd. So they're sitting in the boat, and he says, let's go to the other side of the lake, which doesn't seem to be a big deal, right? I mean, there are a bunch of, several of these guys are fishermen. It's like, we can handle this. We'll go to the other side of the lake. Everybody is totally and utterly exhausted. The time you don't want to see a storm. When you're really, really tired. Michael, when your car is a mess. When school's over and you want to go home and your car is a mess. You're like, Lord, I really don't need this storm right now. And that's what I would like to do, is just look. I've got about five observations about this section and the storm that they faced. The first observation is, storms are an inevitable part of our life. They're an inevitable part. None of us know when they're coming, but they're going to hit. I mean, it's like watching the news with Atlanta. I realized it like a day later that they were hit. I mean, that is not very far from where my nephew lives, actually, where the tornado hit. And you know, living in Texas, I mean, there's these storms. If we're here, we know that eventually the spring's going to hit, right? And tornado warnings, and I mean, they kind of drive you crazy, the weathermen. You know, I mean, it's like they track this thing, and you got to watch the TV, and then you're like, well, what if the power goes out, and then the TV's off, then I'm more worried, and the tornado's going to come, and I'm going to, you know. But they're an inevitable part of life. Apparently, the Sea of Galilee, I've never been, has anybody ever been to Israel? Have you? Have you been to the Sea of Galilee? Apparently, you know, there's like mountains around it, right? And apparently storms can come up very quick. The storm will kind of like come over, the wind will come over the mountains and just swoop down into the lake. So this was not like unusual. They wouldn't have been all that surprised by a storm on Lake Galilee. The problem was, if you read this, and there arose a fierce gale of wind. This is the same word they would use for like a hurricane. This was not just some small event. That I've never been on a cruise. We went on one whale watch one time in right off of Cape Cod. And I was sitting in the boat. And it was a fairly big boat. And all of a sudden, you know, when the boat starts doing this, and I had to close my eyes. I mean, I was like, oh no, you know, but I'm not going to get sick on a whale watch. And I had to close my, but it's like, and it was calm seas. This thing was a fierce wind. The waves were, that's like one of my biggest nightmares. I'm thinking in a big boat. I've never even seen, what's that, the movie Perfect Storm? I would not see that movie. You know, that would give me nightmares forever. Because I'm thinking, I'm just afraid of the ocean. Well, most of these guys were fishermen. They were even afraid. Now, if you're in the boat, like if I was on that whale watch and I was on there with, and it got really bad, and some of the crewmen were like, uh-oh. Like, have you ever been on a plane and you see the look on a flight attendant's face, and you're like,
this ain't good.
You know, that's how, I mean, can you imagine people looking at Peter and going, Peter's afraid? This could be bad. We're going to die. I mean, one time I was on a canoe trip with a friend of mine. We were up in Canada on this lake that was absolutely, it was gorgeous. And we had a couple locals with us that were in canoes behind us. I was in a canoe with this friend of mine from Chicago, and one of these storms hit. And I'll tell you, when your boat, the front of your canoe is going under a wave and out of the wave, and you start thinking, I wonder how much water this thing can hold before you sink. And that's what they're thinking. This was scary. You know, this was a thing. I mean, they even said, well, I'll get to that. But when a storm hits, we can't panic. I mean, we do. They're inevitable. This is an inevitable part of our life. I would love to think everything, you know, once you get saved, like if you watch the guys on TV, once you get saved, your life is going to go along swimmingly and everything is going to be fine. And when those thousands of people leave that building and they go back to real life, what are they thinking? What must they think? Because a storm will eventually hit their life. The storm, and I think the first observation is, storms are an inevitable part of life. Let's not be too shocked. Don't think, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. The second observation is, storms come even when we're obeying God. Whose idea was it to go across to the other side? Who said, let's get in a boat? Come on, you guys. He's in the boat preaching at the side of the thing. He says, come on, guys, get in the boat. Let's go. And you're thinking, you know, well, I trust Jesus. We'll get in the boat. You know, can't be, you know, he's going to be, take care of us. So I'm going to obey. And then the storm hits. I think a lot of times when a storm hits, sometimes people will say, what did I do wrong? What am I doing that God would do this to me? Look at Job. I don't read the book of Job just for thrills because it's really, but he was basically doing what he was supposed to do. And God said, okay, let's see if he'll trust me when it gets bad. You know, Satan said to God, oh, he's only trusting you because you're so good to him. Sometimes storms hit when you're in the midst of obeying him. So we can't go, oh, God, what did I do wrong? I think some storms are by my bad choice. Sometimes they are by bad choices. But it isn't always. Storms sometimes just hit in the midst of obeying God. So don't be surprised. I think, you know, if you can put yourself in a disciple's boat, and there were several boats, apparently, that's what it says in verse 36, and leaving the multitude, they took him along with them just as he was in the boat, and other boats were with him. So I don't think it was just like one boat. I mean, I think they were a couple, I don't know how many, but there were several boats, and you could see people maybe yelling across to each other, you know, thinking, what's going on? And are you taking in a lot of water? And yelling back, what's Jesus doing? You know, is he okay? Or is it, what's it, you know? And like when we were in that canoe, it got so scary. You didn't know if you should paddle or bail. You know, which is going to come first? If I got to get to the shore, but if I don't bail, we're not going to get anywhere. You know, and water's coming in, and all these people are starting to panic. And The third observation I have is storms teach us that we're not in control. I hate that. I mean, I'm not a control freak. I really don't, you know, I'm really not that much of a control person. But if you are, when a storm hits, you realize I'm out of control. We love to control everything in our life. I mean, I wish it was that simple. I wish, you know, and what's interesting is, think about the guys that were fishermen. The storm is even hitting them at their very strength. You know, Peter's like, wow, we can get this boat across the lake, no problem. And in their very strength, the storm hits. Now, I'll use me as an example. I think sometimes, you know, I'm more of a people pleaser type personality. And when a storm hits where somebody's like, they don't like me. Like, now, wait a minute. How can that be? You know, I've worked hard to get you to like me. Our church meetings, I mean, that's why I had to laugh at our, I mean, it's kind of like, but you know what? Not everybody, if I approach the gospel like that, I better be ready for somebody to say, you're nuts. That can't be true. You can't believe that. How close-minded. You know, I mean, I'll tell you, that's a problem for me. If we're going to present the gospel to the world that it's free and that there's one way, like we talked about last week with Oprah, that there's many ways to God, you know, I'm an open-minded Christian, that's what she said, and I think there's many ways to God. She would lose half her audience if she said, read John 3:16. But these were fishermen, and the storms were starting to, this storm was starting to teach Peter and John and that they were not in control anymore, and they couldn't bail out fast enough. They began to get fearful, and they started to blame. Look at what the boats were already filling up in verse 38, and he himself was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. Okay, the other thing about this is kind of odd. I mean, I think one of the problems the disciples had with him was that he was so human. You know, he got so tired at the end of a teaching day that he fell asleep in the boat. Now, if you lived in my house, you'd realize I could fall asleep like at the drop of a hat. I can lay down on the couch and be gone. I love 15-minute naps, you know. But if you were looking at Jesus and you think, but he's God, he can't get too tired. You know, and I think that's what was so confusing to the disciples. He was such a human. You know, he was a guy asleep. You know, he's teaching all day. He gets in the back of the boat, gets a cushion, and he's gone. You know, and I don't know what the disciples were thinking, and I don't know what people were yelling across from the other boats. Is Jesus helping you bail? And is he, you know, is he, wake him up? You know, we got to get more people dumping water out of the boat, and it's funny when they wake him up, they go back there, they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we're dying? Don't you care?" Have you ever said that? Have you, I mean, in your heart of hearts, when you're all by yourself and it's you and God, have you ever said to him, don't you care? I mean, maybe that's why they wrote this. not only are they showing how human he was, they're showing what the life of faith is like. So I don't have to feel like I'm the only one that has ever asked God that question. I don't care, you know, Lord, don't you really care that I'm dying? And you know, it's kind of interesting. I have a couple questions about this. What did they expect him to do? You know? Because at the end of this story, they're like surprised. You know, they didn't get up and say, will you stop the storm? I'm thinking, they probably were thinking, God, Jesus, we got a lot of work to do here. You know, if you just pitch in, you know, maybe you can do something. I don't, you know, but pitch in. You know, you can't sleep through this. And I'm like, what were they really expecting him to do? And what I think we got to learn from this, that storms teach us, man, I'm not in control of everything. You know, I think you learn that as a parent right away, you know, in the first, like, 3 hours, that you're not in control. And it's a hard lesson in life, I think. And what that means is for us, I think, is, you know what? Maybe we just got to trust him. Fourth observation is the storms, in the midst of these storms, it will reveal the sufficiency of Christ. In verse 39, it says, and being aroused, he rebuked the wind and said to the sea. It's kind of amazing when, if you, you know, I imagine if you were going to do this on Hollywood, you'd have him stand up in the front of the boat, and keeping his balance and yelling at the wind, you know, be still. I have, you know, picture him getting up. I mean, this getting tossed around and wet and tired and cold, and he just says, hush. Be still. And then everything stops. You know, it had to be, they, you know, jaw-dropping fishermen going, that's it. I mean, it was that dead silent. From panicking, to worried, to scared, to all of a sudden, you know, sometimes I think I wish I was there. Well, and when storms hit, and they were able to see the sufficiency of Christ and learn something from that. I almost don't want to say this out loud, but don't you learn a lot from a storm? I don't want to be a masochist and say, you know, oh God, bring him on, you know. But when your car breaks down, all of us have a list of times when you were in trouble and you were scared, and I was scared, and I was saying, God, don't you care? And then he comes through. And then the next storm hits. And I'm like, really? Don't you care? And then I see how he takes care of it. You know what? I'll tell you, the older I get, and I've said this to people, the more I say, I don't know. The more I say, I don't know. I guess I gotta just trust them. And there's also it's interesting. again, thinking about, we were just watching, I shouldn't pick on these guys, but we were watching 58, and Benny Hinn, you know, I want to go shake his head, you know, mess up his hair just once, because his hair is just perfect. But he was in Australia, and there was, it was this big show, you know, and they were the typical, if you've ever been, I've never been to one where people, like, they hit them, and they fall down, and there's guys standing behind the people, and they catch them, and then they, well, pick them up again, and then he hits them again, and they fall down again, and they go put blankets over the lady's legs, and think of when they're in the midst of the storm, and I'm thinking, Jesus didn't say, watch this, you know, I'll take care of this wind, and he didn't, like, say to the Father, you know, my Father, will you stop the storm? He didn't pray, he didn't ask, he did it on all of his own authority, three simple words. This had to be a jaw-dropping, amazing thing for these disciples. Enough to be recorded in all three of the Gospels. One of the commentaries I read, there's in Psalm 107, it talks about God stopping the storms. It's relating to the, I believe, to the crossing of the Red Sea and how God just opened up the sea, and that only God could do that. Now and people can say, well, you know, the storm, if you're agnostic or whatever and you really don't want to believe this story, you could say, well, you know, the storm came up just as quick as it, or left just as quick as it came up, and it, you know, can storms can quit just as fast as they start. But it also talks about how it all of a sudden everything became calm and perfectly calm. Waves don't just stop. You know, the wind can stop at the, you know, I don't know if you, even when you, when I was a kid and I used to play in the bathtub, when you get the waves going and it's splashing out and, you know, and you stop, it takes a while for the waves to go down in your bathtub. Well, think of the sea. This was a jolt. They were looking at Jesus and going, whoa. The storms are inevitable. Storms teach us that we're not in control. Storms can teach us that He is, and that He's able to take us through it. And the final thing is, it kind of teaches us about our faith. And that it doesn't, storms won't keep us from our intended destination. Look at verse 1 of chapter 5. And they came to the other side of the sea, into the country of this, I don't know how you pronounce that word. They got to the other side eventually. I'm thinking, as I thought about this story, I was like, I wonder if after it was all over and it became very calm, if they thought, oh, now we got to row. You know, that's what I would do. It's like, you know, because now it's calm, no wind, and now they got, oh, dude. That's a commentary. It doesn't say that. But look at, I mean, in verse 40, Jesus says to them, you know, I'm think about that. He didn't make like this big deal out of this. He said three simple words. And then he looks at the disciples, and they had to be, oh, if I would have just believed them and didn't wake them up, you know, or something. And he looks at them and says, why are you so timid? How is it that you have no faith? I got to tell you, that wouldn't be words I'd want to hear from Jesus, you know. But they still recorded it. And I think, because at the end of the book, we know the rest of the story. These guys are just like me. these guys are just like me. Because when I'm in the midst of my next storm and I go, God, don't you care? And he's going to go, oh, Bob. Just trust me. Like we've talked about before, I mean, all of us, if each one of us could get up here and talk about how God has been faithful to us, every one of us. And yet, when a storm hits one of our lives, we need each other to kind of come up alongside and go, try to remember how faithful he is. In the midst of it, it ain't easy. Young people, it ain't always going to be easy. There's going to be times when you're going to be in your room crying all by yourself. But the storm ought to teach us how faithful he is. And it's kind of, look at their reaction. It's really in verse 41. And they became very much afraid and said to one another, who then is this? Whenever I think of this, I think in the movie The Princess Bride, you know, when he's in the sword fight with the guy, and he goes, who are you? Every time, that's what I'm thinking of the disciples, like, who are you? You know, how can you do this? And now, you know what's cool? They're afraid of the right thing. This is God in the boat. I think a lot of my problem in life is that I'm usually very much afraid of the wrong thing. How many of you have watched... I went to a financial thing this week, and which talks right over my head. I mean, whenever they talk about stocks and bonds and equities, and I'm like, dudes. And all of a sudden, the stock market took a 400-point bump. Well, the next day it took a 500 real bump. And I'm like, all of a sudden I start thinking, I'm afraid of the stock market and what's going to happen to my retirement and what's going to... If you listen to the news in the economy and the war and the election, and we're afraid of the wrong thing. What's the beginning of wisdom? The fear of God. It's not like this cowering fear, I don't think. But if you were in that boat, it might have been. it might have been. And it says they were very, very much afraid and wondered, who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? And it's all through the rest of this book. It's like Steve talked about. This is their life. It's up and down. They're going into the... on Palm Sunday, and I used to like Palm Sunday. In Lutheran Church, when I was a kid, we used to wave the palms. Do you guys know what they would do with those palms at the end of it? They would take them and burn them. And then the next Ash Wednesday, have you ever seen anybody walking around? Did anybody see anybody walking around with ashes on their head? Did you?
Everyone in Chicago.
Well, in Chicago, yeah, but around here. Did anybody see it here?
Yes.
Have you? Those are ashes from the palms from the year before. Just an aside, I don't know. Hopefully it is. He ran out of ashes. This as their life went through this, and they're looking back at this storm and the events that happened there, and then they're going into Jerusalem and thinking, this is it, he's going to take over. You can see the disciples talking to themselves. Remember what he did at the storm? Wait till the Pharisee gets a hold of those guys. And what I'd like, Good Friday, if you can make it, think about, why do we call it Good Friday? I'd like to think about that. Because when we did kids' church this morning, we talked about that day, and it's like the girls are like, oh man, you know, he got betrayed with a kiss. With a kiss. And then this was a bad day. It was a bad day. So why do we call it Good Friday? Hopefully I'll have an answer that might satisfy you. I don't know. So anyway, when you're in a storm, don't be surprised. They're pretty inevitable. Realize they kind of teach us we're not in control. It may be in the midst of when you're obeying him. And God proves that he is sufficient in any storm in our life. Let's pray together. Father, as we enter this week, and there's going to be maybe a lot of talk at work or around us about what Holy Week really is. Father, I pray that in the course of those discussions, or if we get opportunities, that you would give us the words to say, that you would help us help others understand what you did for them at that cross. That your Son is sufficient, Father, to pay for all of their sins and all of my sin. Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for how transparent the disciples were when they wrote these stories. It didn't hide their fears and didn't hide their struggles. But let us know how you had taken care of them and how faithful you and your Son really are in our lives. Father, thanks for this day. Thank you for our church, and thank you for your Son and what he did for us at the cross. We pray in his name. Amen.